Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCAR server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com. And for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control, actually, for this session is Gary, KC2RMO. His backup is WQ1I, Paul and Danbury. And Gary is located in Syracuse. I'm merely opening it up this evening. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. And I'm coming to you from a new location, Port St. Lucie, Florida. We currently have a temperature of about 82 degrees. High today was about 85, 74 tonight. Possible storms a little later, but it's been a beautiful, beautiful day here in South Florida. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled. If so, we ask that you come aboard. All right, hearing no emergency traffic, and that's always a great thing. Do we have anyone celebrating their birthday this week or last week that would like to come aboard so we could say happy birthday? Doesn't look like we have any birthdays. This simply means we're not getting any older. This is the South Cars VORP Global Family Hour, and actually it's our final Global Family Hour on Saturday evening. But the intent of this net is to encourage members, their families, and their friends worldwide to enter into an informal social net highlighting third-party traffic through the members' station. Our program for this Saturday evening will be about classic cars. Should be a great session. I'm looking forward to it. But I do want to advise all stations connected that this net is recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. All stations participating will be part of that recording. So hopefully you'll join us. Tell us about those favorite classic cars that you want, that's in your dream, and join us for our final global hour on Saturday evening. So with that, and nothing further said on my part, Gary, I'm going to throw it your direction. KC2RMO, the net is all yours.
Hey, thank you, Kathy. It's 2304 Zulu and 76 degrees in Syracuse's beautiful Outer Comstock section. And hello, everybody. Welcome to a special night. It's the last Saturday night Global Family Hour before we go to our new schedule. And it really is my pleasure to be your NCS for this special occasion. We have a great topic for our net tonight. As Kathy told you, it's classic cars. Now, I love classic cars. At the very mention of the words Merc-O-Matic, my heart rate increases. Let me buy a nickel. My love affair with cars goes way back to when I was just a little kid. They say when I was five that I could tell you every make and model of car on the road. I built dozens of models, and when I was 10, I had a neighbor bring home some R.E. Dietz drafting paper, and I sent a design idea that I had to the Ford Motor Company. I got a great come back and see us when you grow up letter from the head of the design department. It was easy to be car crazy as a kid growing up in the 50s and 60s. There were just so many cool cars. Now, I figure the best way to do a net about classic cars is just to talk about them all week long. If a car that I thought was cool popped into my head, I put it on a list. Now, we'll talk about these favorites of mine and, of course, your favorites as the net progresses tonight. And let me mention this once again. Tonight is the very last Saturday night Global Family Hour. So here's your chance to be part of South Cars history by checking in. Now, maybe you've never checked into a net before or you generally just listen. Tonight, it's time to come aboard and let's hear you. So let's do that right now by taking our first round of check-ins just to say hello. It's the last Saturday Night Global. I'm KC2RMO. This is South Cars looking for check-ins right now.
One India. Six, Victor.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Sierra United November.
Lima, Charlie Bravo, and you had a JD8 Delta key up there, Gary.
What a great start. Yeah, George, I saw JDH doubling with Gordon there, so it'll be one India, then JDH, and then six Victor, and so on and so forth. Thank you guys for all checking in so early and so well. Let's get things going with one India. My backup. Hello there, Paul.
Well, good evening, Gary, and good evening, South Cars, and welcome to the last Saturday night Family Global. And great topic tonight, Gary. Growing up when I did, I was exposed to all kinds of fancy cars. My father was a car freak, and he had a bunch of them. and of course, you have great memories of those cars from those days, so I'm looking forward to talking about some of them anyway. So back to you and back to everybody else. Have a great night, and we'll hope everybody else comes aboard and joins us this evening. WQNI over to KC2RMO.
Me too. And, Paul, it's great to have you along tonight. Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned about cars when you were a kid. Most vivid memory of one of the cars that we had when I was a kid was my dad's 52 Roadmaster, which was a mammoth car, and anybody who's familiar with old Buicks remembers those. And I can tell you, we actually had a head-on collision with a Volkswagen, we drove home in that thing. It was amazing. So I'll tell that story in detail maybe later on in the net. But thanks for being there. It's great to have you along. We will move things along to JDH was checking in, so come on aboard.
Thanks, Gary. W3JDH here, David. Enjoying the last of the family hour. I wanted to make sure I got on here. I don't know how long I'll be here. I'm standing in the front yard of a friend of mine. They're away, and I'm walking their dog. So this really is a mobile situation. I had my first car was a 55 Oldsmobile four-door holiday convertible, which was basically a hardtop that didn't have posts for the front and back doors. I had a 64 Bonneville convertible. I had a 67 Mustang convertible. I had a 69 Oldsmobile 442 convertible. And I had a 74 Buick LeSabre convertible, white top, white car, white seats, dark blue carpet. And I had that car for 37 years. I just sold it a couple of years ago. So that's my experience. Some of those are classics, some of them aren't, but I wish I had all of them back. Back to you, Gary. W3JDH.
Hey, thank you, David. It sounds like with those dogs, you're actually out in the parking lot. Sorry about that. But what a great list of cars. Wow, those are super. That is just great, great stuff. Maybe they're not all what people in the press might consider as classics, but they are all classics. They're just all wonderful machines, and it's great to have you along, and I hope you come back a little bit later on. We move on down the list now to a guy who's been hanging out and hanging up a lot. He's been doing a lot of hanging stuff up, from what the way I understand it. Hello there, Gordon. Come on aboard.
Boy, are you in rare form. Good evening, Gary and everybody, and hi, David. Sounds like you went through some of the ones that I went through also. Well, I'm getting awfully tired of hanging things that aren't square. And we'll talk about that later. By the time it's all over, Kathy will probably be hanging me. Great subject, Gary. Let me just start my entry here by saying that When I was a snotty-nosed junior in high school, I got my first car. And it was a 19, I think you know about this, it was a 1941 Mercury convertible. Chartreuse in color, boy, sharp, black convertible top, wheel closures on the back wheels, 6-inch lowering shackles, dual pipes, Hollywood mufflers, a police-type spotlight on the driver's side, an ahuga horn, and I was in Cat City. The car had been bought from a... Let me buy a nickel here. I bought it from a mechanic who was an excellent mechanic. Worked at one of the service stations in San Francisco. He had modified it. He had bored out the engine. The engine was a 6-cylinder straight block and put a little more oomph in it. He had a high ratio rear end in this baby. A 6-volt system. Enough space under the hood. When I put my ham gear in there, I could put a 6-volt diesel battery on one side of the block, so I had some extra power to talk. Back to you, Gary, KY6V, over.
Hey, thank you, Gordon. This is KC2RMO. Wow, what a car. Yeah, you had told me about that before. I had forgotten what you had for an engine in that. I was going to ask if that was a flathead or a flathead V8 or what, but that answered the question. What a ride. Holy cow. I want to hear more stories about that, because that's a classic hot rod. That really is. This was a great piece of machinery. And like the song said, you know, crazy about a Mercury. You know, that's why Springsteen wrote it, and Alan Jackson sang so beautifully of it. They're just amazing cars. I love Mercs. I absolutely love them. But we continue now as we head on out to Ohio and say hello to Rick VXP. Come on aboard.
This is N1VXP, Rick, in quite warm Chillicothe, Ohio. Current temperature, 82. Had a high of 87 today, so I almost feel like I was down in Florida. Never think that Ohio weather is trying to mimic Florida type weather, but we've been doing it. And classic cars. I can remember from probably the first day I remember anything. My grandfather on my mother's side always believed in Buicks. So we, anytime they came to visit, it was always the big Buick Roadmaster. And up until the day he died, always drove Buicks. He would not buy anything but Buicks. And he said, you know, it's just that's what he felt was the good classic car. My father, on the other hand, wanted something that was reliable. And I think the first car I remember in my early years was a, I'm not sure, I think it was a Nash. And he had gotten rid of that, and he bought a Ford. And it was a, I'm not sure, I think it was a Ford Fairlane. And then he went from there. He said, we were planning on a trip from Michigan to Florida. And he said, well, the Ford is just not really going to hold up well. Let me drop for a second. You know, he said the Ford wasn't going to hold up well, and he wanted to buy a car that he really didn't have to pay a lot. And for some reason, a Studebaker Lark happened to be available at his one particular dealership. And because my father had such a decent quality Ford, he was almost able to actually swap car for car. He had to pay a little bit of money, but it was, what my father said, was like maybe 2 months' payments, and it was all paid for. I was like, wow, that's the first time I ever heard of anybody trading. And my father said, yeah, he was just very thrilled to pick up a car. That little Studebaker Lark was a two-door, and did the trip down to Florida and back with no problems. In fact, my father even said he was getting much better gas mileage on that car back when nobody ever thought about gas mileage, but he figured out the total trip was well worth it. And I've always looked at these classic cars, cars today actually. Yeah, I just feel a little uneasy because it seems like the cars that are on the market today are only good for about maybe 5 or 10 years, and then you got to look at another one. And cars back in the 60s and 50s, put a couple of $1,000 worth of work in it, and you got a car that lasts you 20 years. Always enjoyed the older cars. Let me drop 1 second. Always enjoyed the older cars, mostly because of the noise level in the car, and some of them are very quiet. You wouldn't even think you were actually driving along, and very comfortable. I mean, before you knew it, you were doing 80 or 90 miles an hour on the road, and you didn't even feel like you were moving that fast, but very comfortable. And some of the cars today are so noisy and uncomfortable. It's just, I wish somebody would come along and go back to the old style. Build a car that's reliable and build a car that has some luxury to it and not way overpriced. That's the other thing. You get what you pay for today. N1GXD, back to Net Control.
Hey, thank you, Rick. You know, we're going to talk about some of that stuff in just a little bit. I'll tell you a story. First of all, Studebakers. Holy cow. What a great car the Studebaker was. And I'll tell you something about that Lark. In 1959, when that came out, that was Studebaker's record year for production. Everybody and their brother wanted a Lark. I mean, they were ahead of the game on the compact cars. If you remember in the early 60s, from 60 on, right up to probably the middle part of the 60s, there were the introduction of what they called compact cars. They were smaller. They were maybe 3/4 the size of the big cars that were out then. Although a compact car by today's standards, if you took a 60s compact car and put it up against what we, you know, sell as a midsize, say today, it's probably the same or bigger, you know. But that Lark was selling like hotcakes, and it was only when the big companies came out with when Ford came out with the Falcon and GM came out with the Corvair. And Chrysler came out with the Valiant and the Dodge Lancer. The market changed, and Studebaker never saw those production figures again. But Studebaker was known for making extremely well-made cars, and they produced one of the coolest cars, some of the coolest cars actually that were ever produced, not in Detroit, but from South Bend, Indiana, is where they were located. Made by a nickel. You had one of my all-time favorite cars was produced by Studebaker. The Studebaker Avanti is one that I absolutely love. Love that car. But the Hawks and the Starliners, just great cars. So. And we're going to talk a little bit about the way cars were, too, versus today's cars in just a little bit. But we'll move it right along and go down the list one more notch, and we're going to pick up Kathy, K6SUN. Hello there, Kath. Come on aboard.
Well, good evening, Gary, and good evening to everyone tonight. And hopefully everyone's had a great day. Ours has been interesting, but that's not the topic tonight. So I want to start it off saying that I wish I knew David way back then when he had that Mustang, because my desire has always been to get a 64 Mustang convertible. The 67 would have done. But way back, my dad, who passed away in 1992, he liked to restore vehicles. And one he bought was a 49. I'm not sure whether it was a Ford or a Chevy, but he restored that whole thing inside and out. But I remember riding in that vehicle and leaning against that door and falling outside that car and, you know, wondering why in the heck I got in that vehicle. But he also did this with a three-wheel motorcycle. It's what my son learned to really drive on. So he restored that vehicle as well. My brother had a 57 Impala, and, you know, I had a 67 Chevelle when I graduated from high school, and I guess actually now that would be considered a classic car. But George has some of these T-Birds that I would love to have, but they're newer T-Birds. Right now what I have is a 2003 Taurus. Gordon has a 1984, it's called a Maxima, and I'm not sure what the make is, but it's actually considered an antique. So, you know, we have some of those, and I've always had a Ford, a Chevy, but I actually did have a Dodge Ram truck. So I've gone from trucks to cars, and right now that Taurus, which is actually a 2003, 162,000 miles and running great. So I will turn it back to you, Gary, as you continue the net. Hopefully I can check back in. Back to you, Gary, from Kilo 6, Sierra United, November.
Hey, thank you, Kathy. And, yeah, they're both on their ways to becoming classics. Gordon's got to get that Maxima, get that baby running, and get that on the road. I want to see pictures of that. That's what I want to do. That's right. You can get the historic plates for that thing. That'd be pretty cool. Those are some great cars in the past that you had on your list. I was just looking at my list here and seeing what dovetails because I've got this big long list of stuff that I was writing down during the week and said, well, I want to use these cars for the net on Saturday. The 57 Chevy's on there. That's kind of like, to me anyway, the iconic classic car. You know, if you conjure up a vision of a 50s car, it's going to be a 57 Chevy. I mean, that's it. That's the one that's in everybody's mind. So that must have been an awesome car to have around too. But we're gonna go to the list in just a little bit and throw some of my thoughts out and see what else we can get from the folks listening. But we'll go down one more and we'll check in with George Lima Charlie Bravo. Hello there, sir. Come on aboard.
Well, good evening, Gary. KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo. George here in Orange City, and good evening to the rest of the net there. Well, let me start out by saying, back in the day when you used to crank the oil out of 55-gallon drums, I started in a service station, and which allowed me to come in contact with a whole bunch of cars and car parts, and also worked for the Ford dealership, as a cleanup person there, and had quite a bit of contact with different vehicles. Even had to fly to Miami and pick up a few Austin Healey Sprites and also MG Midgets, just to name a few there. But what can I say? I think I started out there with a 49 Oldsmobile, which we put a 57 J2 in it there, and backed it up with a 3-speed LaSalle transmission. If you want to go back a little bit earlier and That was one of my joys there, solid black, and had quite a few others along the way there, mostly Fords and Mercury Lincolns and a few others there, and I'll just kind of stop it there and maybe chime in a little bit later. Back at the time, you know, the vets there and the T-Birds, they were sharp looking cars, but awful rough riding, being real low. They didn't have the suspension that some of the sports cars has today, but nevertheless, they was fun to ride. And let's don't forget the classic girls that went along with them cars in those classic sweaters. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
That was an optional extra. You go to the dealer and order those. Thank you. Cost more. Yeah, it was a pricey option, but some went for it. I love Thunderbirds. I have been a lifelong T-Bird fan. It's without a doubt. And you have to remember about the Thunderbird. It was never really touted as a sports car. I mean, they brought it out in competition with the Corvette, but it was never really designed to be a sports car. They always sold it as a personal luxury car. So you kind of had the best of both worlds. You know, you had performance, but you had luxury. It wasn't really a hardcore sports car. So it was just a nice blend, and it's an American classic, that's for sure. But thank you, George. I do hope you'll check in later. You know, Rick, one thing I wanted to mention, too, I forgot when I was talking to you, that my dad was a Buick man, too. We had a bunch of Buicks. The most notable was that Roadmaster. That amazing. I mean, the car had this giant straight-eight engine in it, and the entire car required its own zip code. I mean, the thing was huge. And I remember him pulling into a gas station. I want to say it had a 21-gallon tank, and I could be wrong on that, but it was a big tank. But I do know that he could fill that car up for $5 with somebody pumping the gas for it, checking the oil, checking the air on the tires, and on a good day, you got a free set of glasses with that fill up too. I don't see how you could go wrong, you know. Plus, it was a great ride. Let me just buy a nickel. We are talking about classic cars tonight, and just in case you're joining us in the middle of everything, you've tuned in to the very last Saturday night Global Family Hour. So kind of a little bit of South Cars history going on here, and I hope you'll stay with us, and I hope you'll participate with this net too, because next week we're not going to be here. So definitely we would love to have you come aboard and be part of the final Saturday night net here. So the question here is, why do we love classic cars? You know, even though modern cars in some ways are superior, you get better mileage, better emissions, electronic systems, new construction techniques. Well, they've lost their character that classic cars have. Now, the interiors of modern cars remind me of somebody sticking a massive high-tech electronics inside of a prison bus. Now, I don't care how much you try to tell me about improved suspension and tires. 2.5 tons of steel and chrome, a big V8, and seats as thick as a couch equal that boulevard ride that nothing nowadays can replace. Classic cars are just that, classic. They're called that for a reason. Amazing styling, just plain beautiful in many cases. Colors that today's crowd can't even dream about. Most modern cars to me look like something out of a bad Japanese comic. And finally, they're just plain cool. The next time some kid pulls up to you in a Honda with a tuned muffler, just remember the sound of a 390 or a fuel-injected Chevy small block, and then try not to have an accident from laughing so hard. We were talking a little bit earlier about some of the cars that you know, are on our wish list, the ones that we think are cool. And all week long, I've been writing these down and said, well, you know, I'm going to throw these ones out to the net and see what people think of it and see if there's anything that you know, they bounce off of it too. So here's my list. We're going to take them in small groups, and then we'll take some check-ins. Now, any discussion of classic cars has to include Cords, Auburns, and Duesenbergs, but I put those in the class by themselves. They're iconic cars. They're movie star cars, so they're not really the sort of cars that we kind of call classic cars. They're kind of beyond that. So here we go. The 32 Ford, the Little Deuce Coupe. The 36 Ford, which was a classy looking car for its time, very sleek styling, and the beginning of a modern look to these cars. The 1940 Ford was the next step in that evolution. Of course, it was cut short because of the war. The 1946 Ford, a lot of Fords here to begin things. And you might remember that from Biff's car as Biff's car in Back to the Future. Let me buy a nickel. And as we head up towards 1950, we'll close it out with the 1948 Buick Sedanette. And I don't know if too many people remember those. That, again, was a very streamlined car. There was all the GM models had a version of that. There was a Cadillac, there was a Chevy, I think they called it a Styline, I think, and there was an Olds version of that as well, and I believe a Pontiac as well. I think they all shared that as an option. They offered it for about 3 years, and then they got rid of it. I wish they never had. It was just a beautiful car. So those are my pre-50 offerings, and we kind of get modern as we... as we cross that 1950 mark. But right now we'll take some more check-ins. Any comments on the cars that I mentioned or any cars that you would like to add as we continue our discussion of classic cars tonight on the very final Saturday Night Global Family Hour? Let's take some check-ins right now. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
Uniform kilos.
6, Victor, recheck. I think I doubled. 6, Victor.
Okay, 3 good ones that time around, so let's pick it up with UKZ. Come on aboard.
Oh, good evening, Gary, and hello to everybody else on net this evening. Usually I don't manage to be around on Saturday nights for the Global, and I'm particularly happy to be tonight, seeing as it's the final one. I didn't know that it was the final one. I didn't get to my email this week. I'm assuming that the South Cars email would have had that in it, but I didn't get to it, so... That's all you can do. I've had an extremely busy week, but luckily I've managed to be around for all 3 nets today. Yeah, the classic cars. Wow, I remember my grandfather had one of the nicest ones that I've ever seen. It was a 66 Chrysler Windsor with a 440 big block in it, candy apple red with a white hard top roof and white wall tires. Just absolutely gorgeous. The thing would nearly stand on 2 wheels when you took off from a dead stop. It was just absolutely incredible. But other than that, the weather up in this endeavor has been absolutely atrocious. I won't go on about the icebergs too much because I did earlier today. So they're around and they're causing the cold and wet weather that we can pretty much look forward to until perhaps July. But if anybody wants to see them, there's lots of tours and stuff that are going out from here in the city. My South Cars number is Echo 2130, and we'll be listening through and probably check in with something a little different toward the end of the net this evening. This is VO1UKZ from St. John's, Newfoundland.
Hey, thank you very, very much for checking in. Boy, I remember that car because I had an aunt that had one. And you're very, very correct about that. That thing probably could stand up going from a dead stop. What an engine in that thing! And it was a big, big car too. That's what we're talking about here. 1960s, big and powerful, and just an awesome car. A great ride too. Very, very comfortable in that thing. So. I do recall those. I recall them very well. Hope you get a chance, Daryl, to check back in. It'll be great to have you along. We'll move it along to JDH, and hello there, David.
thanks for bringing me back. What a wonderful list of classic cars, starting back in the with the 32 Ford. That's still a wonderful car, and it's a very popular street rod. I wanted to tell you one that you didn't put on your list. It was a one of a kind, and it was a 1949-1950 Ford. It was a personal one of a kind. I was 7 years old. We were driving home to Pennsylvania from a summer visit to my father's family in Dallas, Texas. We were in Fort Payne, Alabama in a 1949 Ford, and we got rear-ended. Now, those of you that know the difference between a 49 and a 50 Ford or a 55 and a 56 Ford, you know that a little bit of chrome here or a change in the exhaust pipe there makes the difference. 49 Ford had a round chrome gas cap. The 50 Ford had a door. The 49 had a trunk and license plate holder that was chrome, and the 50 had a sort of a channelized piece of metal that was the same color as the car. We got hit, and the only way that they could get us back to Pennsylvania was to put a 1950 trunk lid on our 1949 Ford. And from then on, we were the only one that I ever knew of that had the 50 trunk lid with the chrome gas cap on the 49 car. One other car that I'll just mention, certainly not a classic, but certainly one that I remember, is the probably somewhere around a 1950 or so Crosley. You talk about a mini car and the compact car of its age. Back to you, Gary, W3JDH.
Oh, wow, a Crosley. Yeah, that was a tiny little car. That was a tiny little car, very, very basic type of transportation. And yet, we actually, David, we did have the 50 Ford on the list. It starts on our next tier. We broke off at 48, and then we were going to pick it up at 50. They called that model of Ford shoebox Fords because they were kind of, you know, had that same profile as a shoebox, and I loved them. The 50, as you recall, had that round spinner in the middle of the grill. 51, they did away with that. And you're right, they had these little tiny changes like that. You change the grill, you know, between year one and year two, and it would become a different model. The 51 model of the Ford, the one you got your deck lid from, I remember had a really cool touch to the taillights. For 51, they put a little blue dot in the middle of the taillight, and it just looks so sharp. I used to love to watch those brake lights come on. It was great. But thank you so much for checking in. I do hope you'll join us again. We move it along to the master of all things hanging, Ed Gordon at KY6B. Hello there, sir.
I love that description, Gary. Thank you. Master knot. Aggravated, absolutely. But it's getting done. KY6V here, down in Florida. Want to take you back to the Roadmaster a moment. I think you and I have talked about this a little bit, but, you know, my father was a Buick guy, too. You know, he's had the three-holers and the four-holers, and the four-holers obviously were the Roadmasters. And the one that he had that I remember the most was in 1949, he bought a brand new one. And it was fire engine red with a black top. And we'd be cruising down the road, and all of a sudden there's a road stop because there's some kind of an emergency going on. And all of the officers officiating that would just flag us right on, thinking that we were the fire chief. But the story I really want to tell is that we took a trip between San Francisco and New York with a week stopover with my uncle in Virginia, who was then managing the property for the owner of the World Bank. But on this trip, we got into about Tennessee, and if you recall the dipstick in a Roadmaster, it was like a serpentine belt, the dipstick that went into the transmission. Let me buy a nickel. And at one of these gas stops, we put that oil stick in sort of backwards, and it sheared off. And I guess the bottom of it went down to the bottom of the transmission system. It didn't cause us any problems. But for the rest of the trip, clear to New York and back to San Francisco, every time we pulled into a gas station, we'd ask, and these are the times where, you know, guys would come out and clean your windows and check your oil and all that kind of stuff. They don't do that anymore. And we'd make a point, would you check the oil, please? And this guy had pulled that dipstick out, and it was half as long as it should have been. He says, oh, my goodness gracious. And we say, well, it must be the oil we're using. Go ahead, Gary, KY6V, over.
Don't buy that wolf's head anymore. It's just, you know, it's no good. It's doing you harm here. Man. But, you know, Roadmasters were just such an amazing car. I'll just expand a little bit on that story I was telling earlier about my dad's Roadmaster. It was 52. It was a midnight blue 52 Roadmaster. We were going out for ice cream one night. My mom, my dad, and myself, and my two brothers. We had not gone very far. We were only down at the end of the street, but there was no stop sign at the end of the street. There was a little island, traffic island, in the middle of it, and kind of a three-way intersection, but no stop. Guy went through the intersection in a Volkswagen. They just started importing them about then. Smacked the Buick head on. Nailed it square in the face. I remember spinning around in that big old car and ending up on that traffic island, and being kind of knocked to the floor. When I got myself up, you know, pulling myself up over the seat, let me buy a nickel. I took a look out the window along with my mom and dad, and we're all looking in. The Volkswagen had folded up like an accordion. Miracle of miracles, the guy didn't get hurt. He opened up the door and got out. Long story short, the Buick had a leak in the radiator, had a dent in the grill, and a crack in the windshield. I think my dad's head hit the windshield. But he was able to put the car in gear, and we drove home. Needless to say, we didn't have ice cream that night. But, but you know, it's pretty amazing to be able to get through a crash like that with so little damage. Just amazing. So, anyhow, that's my Buick Roadmaster story. The topic tonight on the very last Saturday night Global Family Hour is classic cars. We're so happy that everybody's coming aboard tonight and participating in this little bit of South Cars history. It's great to have you along. Let's go along with the list that I've been reading from. These were the cars that popped into my head during the week that I thought I'd just would throw out for folks to talk about on the net. And, of course, I'm hoping that you're going to come back with some of your cars that you consider to be classics. So we already mentioned the 1950 Ford, the shoebox. We're going to jump ahead 5 years now to 1955. And as I was saying before, how much I loved Mercury's, you got to put that 55 Mercury Sun Valley on a list. I think that's got to be. That was the car that had half the roof was plexiglass. It was that deep green plexiglass, and it just looked great. Ford had a version of that with the Victoria. They had a half plexiglass roof Victoria. They had them for 2 years, 55 and 56. The problem was they tended to get a little bit warm on the inside. 56, they put a shade that you could pull across to keep the heat out, but by then the reputation was just, they're too hot, you know, but they looked awesome. Let me buy a nickel. So there's our Mercury Sun Valley. We'll stay with the Lincoln Mercury division. How about a 55 Lincoln Capri two-door? What a big, cool-looking car that was. Very streamlined-looking, very classy, and super amount of power in those babies. Great ride. Absolutely great ride. Big and powerful and beautiful. 55 Packard Caribbean. Boy, you want to talk about a great car. Packard made what many considered to be the best-made cars in America. They were just wonderful pieces of craftsmanship. If you ever want to see an interesting video, go and Google Jay Leno and Packard. He has a Packard that he had restored. He takes you for a ride on this thing. It's a cut from Jay Leno's garage, and just gives you an idea of how remarkable these cars really were. They actually had, in this particular model, in the Caribbean, they had reversible seats so that if you got tired of the pattern, you could unbuckle them and flip them around, and you had a brand new interior. Pretty neat. And finally, we will finish it up. We were talking about Nash's earlier. Well, there was another great practical car. Saw a lot of Nash's. You know, Nash's were used a lot in the 50s for police cars and fleet cars, and they were great family cars. And the beauty of that was that the Nash's had the world famous drive-in special fold-down front seats, and they were good for more than camping. I'll tell you that much. So we're talking about classic cars tonight. We're going to take another round of check-ins right now. Let's see what we can conjure up here. So we're taking check-ins on the Global Family Hour. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
One India.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Okay, we have three good ones here, too. Hello there, Paul, One India. It is good once again to hear from you, sir.
Hey, Gary, good to be heard. And just a little off topic here. I've totally frustrated here with my computer. I need to ship it up to Daryl and have him fix it for me. I get pop-ups. I have audio coming out of nowhere. I've totally lost control of both of my browsers, Internet Explorer and Firefox. I have no idea what to do with them. Anyway, as far as classic cars, well, my favorite car is the first car that I ever learned how to drive on, and that was my father's 1968 Firebird 400, which was a heck of a car to learn how to drive on. But that was the car that I first drove. Took my driver's test in it and had a great, wonderful time with it, and was totally annoyed when my father sold it to someone else and bought himself a 1972 Corvette. Very annoyed. I thought he should have just given me the Firebird. I don't understand why he didn't. Well, I do understand why he didn't. But anyway, that was a great car. Loved that car. It was the green with a black ragtop and an awesome machine. Tons of power. The most incredible car that I ever was in terms of like just being pressed back into the seat. My cousin Lois, she married a guy who had, I guess that makes him my cousin-in-law. She married a guy who had and I don't know the year, but it was a Shelby Mustang, a GT350, with a Hurst shifter. And boy, that thing was a monster. Just an absolute beast. It made the Firebird, you know, seemed like a kid's car, but it was unbelievable. It was, and it was gorgeous too. It was just a beautiful thing. Mustangs are nice to begin with, but what Carroll Shelby did with those things was just unbelievable. Let me drop it for a second here. I never drove it, and I never rode in it, but probably the coolest car I ever sat in was a Mercedes Gullwing. And my father was an architect, and he had a colleague, and this guy had one of those cars, a Mercedes Gullwing. And at the time, he had bought a new house, and he had this car, and his wife was nagging him that, you know, the car, get rid of the car, get rid of the car, let's sell the car. He traded it, he gave it or sold it in trade to a contractor who built him a in-ground swimming pool in the back of his house to get the Gullwing, which I'm sure was the contractor got the better of the deal, because those things are priceless nowadays. But very, very nifty, very cool car. And yes, I remember those. I remember the Ramblers. My friend of mine had one, and those seats go down. And yes, they would come in quite handy at times if, you know, you got tired or something. High school days. Anyway, back to net. WQNI.
Yeah, that's what it was. If you got tired or something, that's exactly what it was. You know. Do you recall? I would dig that pool by hand if it meant getting, you know, a Mercedes-Benz Gullwing. Let me ask you something, Paul. Little bit of a trivia question for you. What car of the 80s borrowed the Gullwing theme? There was a car in the 80s that had Gullwings. Do you know what it is?
No. I mean, unless you're talking about a DeLorean.
Absolutely right. And if you paid a little extra, you got a flux capacitor with it too. But you're absolutely right. The DeLorean had the Gullwing doors too. Very, very good catch. I was wondering if maybe you might know that. 71 CUDA was the fastest car I've ever been in. I worked with a guy who had one. He owned it for about, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 months before his father threatened to A, send him to the electric chair, or B, have him deported if he didn't get rid of that car. A case in point was we had the car on one of the local highways here at 3 in the morning going 140 miles an hour, and there was still plenty of room to go on that gas pedal. Granted, he did have a little work done on it, but that was insane. We both just, you know, when, by the time we'd hit 140, both looked at each other and said, you know, we are doing something very, very stupid here, and backed it down. But I will never forget that feeling. But you talk about fast. Fast? Did he say fast? Let me buy a nickel. Indeed, he did. A few years later, as I was working at General Electric, the lady that was one of the ladies in the IT department had a husband who had one of those Shelby GTs. This was the GT500, it was an insanely fast car. He wouldn't let her drive it to work because, for one reason, you couldn't even get that car out of first until you were going 60 miles an hour. So he thought it would be a good idea just not to put that thing in daily use. She had great pictures of it. It was a show winner. The guy just basically showed it, and you know, there wasn't too much you could do with it except watch people drool. But what a great car. All of those were, it was just amazing stuff. Thank you, Paul. I'm hoping you're going to be checking in too. We will move along though to Ohio and say hello to Rick. Did you know Ohio means hello in Japanese? So Ohio, Rick, come on aboard.
I had to wait till everything dropped there, and one GXP here. Yeah, I've heard that saying before. You mentioned the mid-50s. What about the 55 Chrysler New Yorker? Now, to me, that was a luxury car that I can say as a witness that it had power. I had a friend of mine who had one, and he was actually, I don't know how he ever got it, but he restored it mechanically to actually working quite well. And body-wise, really wasn't really too much damage on it, just wear and tear, original paint color. And we used to ride around on that up on the highways. Never do the speed limit. Always had to do a little bit higher. And never got a ticket. I had, you know, seen it so many times. The state trooper would be on the side of the road, and he'd see us, and he'd wave at us, like, how you doing? Now, about maybe 7 or 8 months later, I was over at this friend's house, and we had a knock on the door, and it was the chief of the local police department. And he's, you know, commented to this friend of mine. He says, wow, that's a nice car. Can I take a look at it? You know, one thing led to another. This friend of mine sold his car to this police chief, actually making about triple what he normally would have thought have been a decent price. I won't say what it was, but quite a bit. Let me drop a second. Yeah, it was quite a bit of money, considering what cars back then were going for. And, it was about maybe, 4 or 5 days later. It was on a weekend. I was over with friends of mine, and we were going to get together with some other guys and do a fishing trip. Well, the chief of the police department pulled up with his car and said, guys, you want to have some fun? And we were like, what does he mean, fun? So he says, hey, why don't you take a ride with me? He said, I'm going to do something I normally won't do, won't let anybody else do it, but I just want to let you guys feel how much fun it is to legally get away with something. We did 130 miles an hour on the highway, and he says, I got more room on the gas pedal. I could go even higher if I want. But 130 miles an hour felt no more than about maybe 80 or 85. Very smooth, very quiet. I mean, we didn't even know the engine was revving that high. And one thing I always liked about those was the odometer was actually what was considered a pencil type. You didn't have the dial. You had just this rod with the markings on it. And you could see this thing spinning around, markings going up higher. But it was a great car. And as far as the Buick Roadmaster, I got one question on that. Let me drop for a second. Back when I was very young, I remember my grandfather, anytime we went to visit him or he came to visit us, my brother and I would always fight about the back seat. Who got to ride shotgun in the back seat? Was it in the Roadmaster that they had an armrest in the center that flipped down from the back? If I'm not mistaken, that's on the Roadmaster. Or I'm not sure if that was the one or if it was another Buick, but with my brother and I would always fight over who got to sit on top of that to be able to look out the window and really have fun. N1TXB, back to net control.
Hey, thank you, Rick. I'm trying to remember now, and I kind of think that there was an armrest pulled down on that. I remember the interior, it was like a cloth striped fabric, and I'm pretty sure there was that center pull down, and I remember the seat, the front seat, on the back of the front seat, there was like a grab bar that was made out of, it wasn't a hard bar, it was a stuffed vinyl bar, you know, that you could grab onto in case you were going around a corner and you needed to hang on to something, I don't know. But I remember that too. But I'm gonna say about 95%. I remember a fold down seat in that, or a fold down armrest in that. So I think that was the Roadmaster that had that. And you know that 55 Chrysler. One of the cool things about those cars, and all 50s Mopars, and one of my favorite features of any car, and boy, I wish they'd bring this back. Was push-button drive. I loved push-button drive. You know, you'd reach over to the left and you'd press D, you know, and you were in gear, you know, or R, you know, and you were in reverse. I loved that, and they kind of did away with it. Other manufacturers other than Chrysler used it. As a matter of fact, the 58 Edsel had push-button drive, and it had the push-buttons located in the center of the steering wheel, which is kind of interesting, you know. I mean, you know, Edsel kind of did some strange things, you know. So it was short-lived, and, you know, you either loved them or hated them. I thought they were kind of cool. I almost bought one when I was a kid. I was 17. There was a salmon and white Edsel convertible for sale on at some gas station, and the guy was, you know, he really wanted to unload it, you know, and I'm like, wow, you know, it's kind of cool, you know, I'll go for it, but I never had the money. The first car, Paul, you know, you were talking about that Firebird as your first car. I have to just take a minute here and tell you about the first car that I ever got. Let me buy a nickel. My very first car was a 1964 Chevy 2 with very bad rings on it. It just smoked like crazy. Big old dent in the front fender. I had just marginal floorboards. You couldn't really see through them, but you got a pretty good idea of what was underneath. And no gas pedal. It just had the little arm that held the gas pedal there. But I bought it for $50, and you know, that was my first car. Blue. All Chevy 2s were blue back then. George, Lima Charlie Bravo, come on aboard, sir, and join us in this mayhem.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the first car I bought, Jerry's old 53 Ford there with old flathead 8 engine in it there, and did have that right fender used to flap in the breeze as they go down the road there, and had a old mop stick wired to the foot feet because the old rubber pedal wasn't there, so what can I say there? But, if you want to do a 140 in a heartbeat, and the old bird I got outside there, it's only gutted tuned for street right now, but got a chip in it, but we can tune it for racing there, and it'd give it to you in a heartbeat, no questions asked there, so I drove home from Gordon's place a couple weeks back there, and just cruising about 115, 110, something like that there, and it didn't take too much along getting home, but it'd sure rack it up in a heartbeat. So every once in a while, I get the opportunity, I'll get it out there and let it eat there. But you know. Old Plymouth, I think a 52 or 53 Plymouth had a push button. I know a 58 Dodge did there, because took a trip to up to Maine there. I might have told you the story about that with two or three cases of moonshine liquor in the back of it there. But we took That old Edsel engine, 472 engine, put it in a 53 Ford a truck there, and it would take us down the road, you know, in a quick, tight manner there. Can say in the 50s, I did have a 57, which I put a 430 Lincoln in, and it would take you down the road. Did have a 59 Ford there. So about got the 50s covered in the Ford department there. But I'm still looking for something to catch my eye there. You know, we always are looking out. I've got a 460 engine and a C7 transmission sitting out in the yard looking for an old Ford truck that I might stick it in one day before Calgon takes me away somewhere. But goodness gracious, like I said, you want a ride, come south and we'll take you on a ride. TW40, Charlie Bravo, back to Nick Control.
Oh, those sound like some mighty fine rides too. Yeah, I am a Ford guy. I've been a Ford guy ever since I was a kid. I mean, that was just the car that I naturally gravitated to. I love them all, but my favorite, if you know, if I look at this list and, you know, there's just more Fords than anything on it. And, you know, there's Chevy people and there's Mopar people and, you know, and but I'm a Ford guy. And so that's what we're kind of in the same groove. Edsel's had a huge engine. There was a monster engine in that thing, and you know, say what you will about the Edsel, they knew how to do big. That's for sure. Flathead V8s are some of my favorite engines. I have three favorite engines, and you know, this is kind of like everybody's got an opinion, right? I don't know if you can hear that, but somebody's blowing off fireworks on the street. It's not gunshots, folks. Everybody's safe, you know. But I have three favorite engines, and that is the Ford Flathead V8. It's just a great engine, and it can be easily modified and easily reworked. And you know, there's more than a fair share of flatheads that have been souped up to over 300 horsepower, which is pretty amazing for an engine that came out in the early 30s. After that would be the 289, the Ford 289, that small block engine that powered many a Mustang and many a Falcon Sprint and a few Fairlanes too. Great little engine, and had an awesome sound to it. It just had a gutsy little sound. That was an offshoot of the 260. They just basically bored that thing out. And then finally, the FE engine, the 390 and the 427. Those big old monsters that you found in the Galaxy. Paul says Chevy 302. Nice engine too. Nice engine too. Very nice engine. Those were my three faves. So, you know, when next time around, let us hear yours. But those are the ones that I like. We're talking about classic cars tonight. This is it. This is it, friends and neighbors. This is, once it's gone, it's gone. This is the very last Saturday night Global Family Hour. I thank you all for being here tonight and participating. It is just great to have you along. We continue with our talk about classic cars tonight. We're going to pick it up. We're still in the mid-50s. 56 is where I'm at right now. And I'm going to buy a nickel and tell you that the two cars that I would mention here are kind of a tie for my 56 Fords, the 56 Ford Victoria or the Club Sedan. Just really cool cars. I love mid-50s Fords. They had given up the flathead by then. They'd gone to an overhead valve engine. Great engine, great styling, and just a lot of chutzpah with those cars. They're just awesome vehicles. 56 DeSoto Fire Dome. What a beautiful car that is. And what a killer. That thing was just a big, beefy, fast, cushy car. My Uncle Mike had one of those. And in between his Cuban cigars and everything else, and a lot of lasagna, he would take us for rides in that fire dome, and I absolutely loved it. I remember the really cool thing about that was you opened up the door, and in the very back there were these dome lights. They weren't mounted on the roof, they were mounted on the roof pillar, and they had a script, DES, engraved in it, and it just looked really, really sharp. 57, of course, you got to go with that 57 Chevy Bel Air, the all-time great 50s classic car, you know. It was good enough to have Eric Clapton mention it. There's got to be something about it, you know. It's rock and roll heart, you know. I get off on 57 Chevys, and it is just a classic car, beautiful car. 57 was the year for my favorite Thunderbird. I love 57 T-Birds. They are wonderful-looking cars. There again, was just the epitome of what they were trying to do to me. It was really a personal luxury car. Matter of fact, I've got one, probably the nicest-looking one I've ever seen is the desktop on my computer. And then we will wrap this this little segment up with going back to kind of different car than what we've been talking about. And that is the 1959 Imperial Southampton two-door. You had a rectangular wheel, torsion bar suspension, swivel seats, and of course, push-button drive. What an awesome car. And it was as big as a city block. Just phenomenal stuff. Let's continue. Let's see if we can get some check-ins right now as we continue talking about classic cars on the final Saturday night Global Family Hour. Let's hear from you right now. Let's take some check-ins on South Cars.
Six, Victor.
One, India.
Six, Victor. Hello there once again, sir.
Well, thank you, Gary. Gordon here, KY6B. Boy, you got me rolling in lots of memories here tonight. Great show. You know what I liked about the 57 T-Bird was the portholes. I thought that was class. And then you mentioned Harry Clapton, you know, and he's one of my favorite guitarists, and you're a guitarist. So that put some more jelly on the cap. Want to tell you two quick stories going back to the Roadmaster conversation between you and with Rick there in Ohio. I think that there was a fold-down bumper, if you want to call it a bumper, on the back seat, but I'm having trouble remembering that. Many, many years ago, obviously. But my father, Gary, had bought this 1949 Roadmaster that I commented on earlier. Bright fire engine, red and black top and all that stuff. And I had this 1941 Mercury convertible that I had mentioned. I had about six kids with me, three in the front seat, three in the back seat. We had gone to Sears. It was getting close to Christmas. Do a little shopping. Let me buy a nickel here for a moment. And I, being a hotshot, wet-nosed teenager at that point, we got in the car after doing the shopping, and I had this habit of peeling out of the parking lots, you know. And with six kids aboard, and I peeled out, and I threw the cluster gear in the transmission right out through a hole in the housing. And I was crippled. I could actually motivate in first gear, but second and third were, you know, history. So I limped home, and I said, Pop, I've got a little bit of a problem here. And I says, can I borrow your new Roadmaster? And he says, okay. So we parked the Mercury, got into his Roadmaster, got part of the kids home, and I said, let's go for a ride. Let me buy one more nickel, and this will be the last one. There's a roadway that's probably, I don't know, 5 or 7 miles long that runs right next to the Pacific Ocean in San Francisco. A great thoroughfare for opening it up. And I said, guys, you ready? And they said, we're ready. And I floored that baby. And I can't recall, Gary, whether it was 110 or 120 was the top inscripted information on the speedometer, but I had a tube lock. And the only thing that I can remember is the telephone poles as they went by, and they were going zip, 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 zip. My father, who is now a silent key, never knew that story. KY6V, back to you, sir.
It's like the Commander Cody song, you know, Hot Rod Lincoln. The telephone poles looked like a picket fence. You know, you know, that reminds me of something that we did in high school. I do remember high school, such as there is a hill that runs alongside of William Nottingham High School, and there was a young gentleman who had himself a 56 Oldsmobile with a rocket engine in it, and they weren't kidding when they said rocket. That thing could move, and what a great car that was. Again, it was a heavy car. GM cars of that vintage had, when you bought them with tinted glass, they had this tint that I don't know, after I guess 1960 you couldn't get anymore, but it was like the same color that you would see in like an aircraft windshield. You know, it was like a blue, like a cobalt blue tint, and it just was awesome. I don't know, just great looking color. But anyway, we were on lunch, and Mark was this kid's name, and Mark said, hey, what do you say we see how fast we can make it up the hill in the Olds? And we're like, yeah, all right, we got nothing better to do, right? So we all pile into this Olds, and he starts out at the bottom of the hill, and he drops the car in gear, and we make one run up the hill, and we're, I don't know how fast we were going, but we got up there pretty quick. Let's try it again. So he goes down the bottom of the hill, and he starts out. He drops the car in gear, and the tires are spinning and smoking, and we're lurching forward and, you know, accelerating. All of a sudden, we hear this clang, like, and we can see rolling down the hill behind us the drive shaft. And, of course, we're slowing down because there's nothing driving the car, you know. So we kind of ran out of momentum towards the top of the hill. He had this total look of panic on his face. Basically, what we did is we limped the car backwards down the hill. We pushed him into the parking lot, and we didn't see that car for quite some time because his dad was not very well pleased with the whole deal. We're talking about classic cars tonight. Let me buy a nickel. We're talking about classic cars tonight as we do our final network on the Global Family Hour for a Saturday night, and we go to my pal One India, who's got something to say. So Paul, come on aboard.
Wow, how did you know I had something to say? Oh my goodness. Anyway. Yeah, you know, it was a very cool car, too. I had a friend when I first started college, Peter. Peter decided not to go to school. And, yeah, Gary's clairvoyant. He decided not to go to school. He got a job working at a car dealership. And, of course, part of the deal was that he would get to, you know, bring home certain cars. You didn't have to buy a car. And he was driving, and I got to drive it, this Volvo
P1800. It was a fastback. They came, you know, like a regular hardback, or they had, it was almost like a hatchback type of design, but it was a very cool car. P1800. And it was, this particular one had, it was an automatic transmission, and it had an electronic overdrive. So your windshield wiper switch, you know, that was on the column of their, or your turn signal switch on the column of the wheel, you just pulled that forward, kind of like you do nowadays to turn on your bright lights. But that's not how you did it back in those days. You just pull that forward and click, and boom, car would be going into overdrive once you got up to a certain speed, of course. That was a very neat car. But I did want to comment on the 57 Thunderbird. That is a gorgeous machine. And Gordon is right. Those port windows on the hardtop is very cool. They are very cool looking. But that car, I'm pretty sure that car, that's a, those windows, that top is a removable hardtop. I'm not sure it actually came in a convertible versus a hardtop model, and anybody please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think those were removable hardtops. And that thing with the top off, it's just is one of the most beautiful cars ever made. I mean, it is just gorgeous. The lines on it, it's just, I mean, it is. It's absolutely beautiful. Let me drop it here. And yeah, Gordon, Gary, there's all kinds of stories about that you've driven your parents' cars and things that happened that day. Unfortunately, in your friend's case, Gary found out, or in other cases, never found out. Or never knew about. And I told Gordon one of these once when I saw him, I believe, about that very same 1968 Firebird. It was an automatic transmission, and it had it was a convertible. And I remember my friend and I, my friend Barry, we were riding around in that car, and we were picking up girls. And we had packed in, I think, maybe four of them into the car with us. And there was, like, a pretty well fit three in the back seat. And, yeah, don't ask me why, but Barry was sitting next to me, and not one of the girls. But the girls were in the back, three of them across the bench seat, and one of them was sitting, like, on the console, you know, facing her friends in the back. And let me just drop it. Car. And we're driving along. It was like in a residential neighborhood. So, you know, we had houses. They were like kind of almost like row houses, you know, on either side. So you're like in this corridor. And the girl who was sitting on the console, for some reason, decided to, like, I guess she wasn't comfortable, and she decided to rearrange her rear end or something, and slid back a little bit, and she knocked the gear shift on the automatic transmission into reverse. And we're driving along, and all of a sudden this clunk, and then you heard this sickening sound, Gary. It was, you know, you could hear teeth clicking. But the car was all right. Apparently nothing broke, or at least nothing that we ever knew about. So that was horrible. And that car that he ended up getting rid of that and getting a 72 Corvette. And next time around, I have a very interesting story about that Corvette too, which again Gordon may have heard at some point. I'm not sure. But, I'll never forget that sound when that car got thrown into the wrong gear going the wrong way. Oh, God. But anyway, WQ1I, back to net.
Oh, the beautiful durability of the Hydromatic. Oh, man. I think I would have had a heart attack just listening to it. It's like, you know, oh, my God, what a sound. But, They it's funny, you know, you talk about, you know, the way cars are made today, and you'll always hear the argument, oh, today's cars are made better, blah 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 blah, you know, and it's, they're they're not really. I mean, they have some things that are maybe better, but they're not really better. They're not even the same. You can't even compare them. It's apples and oranges. The cars of the 50s and 60s are totally different animals than what we call cars today. And you could do something like shift into reverse while going 40 miles an hour and still survive it. You know, it can happen. You know, I don't think you'd want to try that with something today. And I have to tell you, I'm looking at this desktop of mine, which is such a beautiful 57 T-Bird. It's white, and I don't normally like white cars, but it suits it so well. And this has the portholes on the removable hardtop, and just some gorgeous Kelsey Hayes wire wheels on this thing. It's just a perfect 57 T-Bird. And I think, Paul, that you could get these as a ragtop, and I think the removable hardtop was an option that you could go. Because I seem, it's funny, now that you mentioned that, I never really thought about it, but I do seem to recall these with an actual cloth top too, so I think you could get the removable hard top as an option, and I think a lot of people chose that option because it was it just looked so good, and you had portholes, you know, it's cool stuff. And the other cool thing about the 57 T-Bird and 55, 56, 57 had them when they went to the Square Birds, which were cool in their own right, but when you went to for those 3 years. You had that. No, 55 did not have them. I corrected myself. 56, 57 had the side vents. The little vents opened up on the front fender, and gave you ventilation, fresh air ventilation that way. They actually put them on in 56 because the 55s got a little warm. So they said, "Oh, that's a pretty good idea. Let's put some vents in there." And they used the side vents. I think Kathy had a check-in. I think she did. So let's find out if she did. K6SUN, are you there, ma'am?
Well, Gary, I'm not too sure if I'm here or not. I've been listening to what's been going on this evening. Very funny comments, Paul and George and Gordon. But I'll make these few comments to you. Gordon, this is for you. I'm going to have that special conversation with your dad, and I'll have to introduce myself to him. Paul, very special comments. But Gary, I'd like to trade my Ferrari, my pink Ferrari that I was given by South Cars for that 57 Thunderbird, or maybe that 64 Mustang. Thanks for doing the net tonight. Very interesting, very comical. But I want to see what maybe Gordon and Paul have to say about my comments. So with that, I'll turn it back to you. And that's probably my final check-in. I've enjoyed it thoroughly this evening, and hopefully you have as well. Back to you, Gary. KC2MRO from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Well, with the power vested unto me by the board of directors of Southcar and as assistant net manager of said organization, you are free to trade that pink Ferrari for a 57 T-Bird anytime. So no problem there. Gordon or Paul, do you have any comments upon what Kathy has said here?
Oh, my goodness. Six Victor.
Six Victor, go right ahead.
Thank you, Gary. My father passed away in 1992. One heck of a gentleman. I've been trying to communicate with him ever since. If Kathy can accomplish that, I'd like to talk to him also. KY6V, go ahead, Gary.
It's nice work if you can get it. thank you, sir. Let's see if Paul has any comments to that end. Paul, One India, are you there?
Well, Gary, my WQ and I here.
My father passed away in 1989. So again, if Kathy can pull that off, I think it'll make a heck of a net. I think it'd be a good one. WQNI.
I don't know if I want to be NCS on that one. My dad died in 1959, and I don't even know where to begin on that one. But thank you, gentlemen, and thank you, Kathy. And in case you're wondering what the heck you're listening to if you just joined us, this is the very last Saturday night Global Family Hour. I'm KEC2RMO. Tonight's topic of discussion, we're talking about classic cars and the afterlife. And they kind of go hand in hand. And we've discussed the afterlife portion. We're going back to classic cars right now. I was kind of reading from my list of cars that popped into my head this week that I thought would be cool to talk about. I invite your comment on them and your input, too, if you come up with any cars that you'd like to throw into the mix. So we got all the way through the 50s. We're starting with the 60s now. And I'm going to start out with a couple of Chevys, actually. 1960 Chevy Impala Sport Sedan. Very cool car. I generally don't like four-door cars. But the Sport Sedan had a really cool look to it. And it was kind of famous, too. And you may not know what song that thing got mentioned in, but I will mention it. I will tell you what it is, and I don't know if you knew it or not, but if you know the Beatles song Come Together, no, it wasn't 409. It was in Come Together, Here Come Old Flat Top, He Come Moving Up With Me. The 60 Chevy Impala Sports Sedan is known as a flat top. And that's what McCartney was writing in that song. A little tidbit of car trivia there for you, and Beatles trivia too. So the Sport Sedan made my list. The 61 Chevy Impala Bubble Top is a awesome car. That George is your 409. There you go. That was the first year for the 409. Let me buy a nickel. And that Bubble Top is a favorite of early 60s GM collectors. Oldsmobile and all the cars, all the divisions had their own versions of it. 61 Corvette. How could you not like a 61 Corvette? That is the original Route 66 Corvette. And that inspired me to want to get a 61 Corvette and just drive on Route 66. I still want to do that. It's been a dream of mine for an awful long time, and I may never realize it, but it's nice to think about. 1962 old Starfire. What a great car that was. Big, powerful, cool interior, gorgeous interior. And what I loved about that car was on the side that ran the entire length of the side was this. Oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 inch wide stainless steel strip that ran the whole length of the car. Just looked super cool. Let me buy a nickel. We'll do a few more. We'll go up to 1963. Another Mercury for me. This was the Mercury Monterey two door breezeway. They had the a lot of times you'll see that four door breezeway, but they also made a two door model. And that looked great. What was the breezeway? Well, it was the back window that rolled down. I don't know why more cars don't have that. I have a back window on the truck that slides open. It's awesome. What great ventilation. And I'm surprised they don't do that more often. But it looked cool, and it was very functional. 63 Studebaker Avanti. I mentioned that earlier, and what a gorgeous car that was. It was designed by Raymond Loewy, who had done Studebakers before, the Starliners and Champs of the 50s. Also had done many great industrial designs designed streamlined locomotives, the Lucky Strike pack, Coca-Cola bottles, everything. Great touch for design, and a beautiful car that he turned out with the Avanti. And finally, we'll go with the 1963 or 1964 Falcon Sprint. I can't decide which one I liked better. They're two different body styles, but they're just cool little cars. They had that 260, which became the 289 in them, and I can't think of a neater little car to be driving around in. So we're talking about classic cars tonight. We're inviting more check-ins. Let's see if we can get them. As we continue, anybody out there want to come aboard? Say so now.
One India.
YZR.
One India. Hello there, Paul.
Well, Gary, since you're hopelessly lost in the 60s, 1963 Corvette split window. That's a car. That's probably my favorite Corvette, and I think that's the only year they made it, and that's just a classic vehicle. What a nice car that was. And I might as well jump ahead to 72 and see if I can tell this story quickly about my dad's 72 Stingray. This is when he broke my heart and sold the 68 Firebird to a friend of his for his daughter who was going to college instead of giving it to me. And which in retrospect was a very smart thing for him to do. But there was a local Chevrolet dealer up in our neighborhood in Northeast Philadelphia at the time. It was called Matt Slap Chevrolet. And it was the end of the summer, and Matt had about 20 to 30 72 Corvettes lined up in front. Obviously, he had bought too many. And they were selling, they were like giving them away. It was like, you know, I think he bought that car for $5,000. I don't know what they were going for at the time, but I think it was a hell of a deal, okay? The 72 Corvette. So it came in two configurations at the time. You can get it with a rag top or the split top, and he had gotten the T-top, the split top. And so the 68 Firebird was green. And being a man who doesn't, I guess, change his mind much, he went and picked out one of the green Stingrays. We went to go, they prepped the car. We went to pick it up, and he took me with him. So we're driving home in the Stingray, sitting pretty. And we get up to about 40 miles an hour, and the thing just, like, just craps out. It just stalls and dies. And we're like, what the heck? He starts the car up again. We continue driving. A little bit over 40 miles an hour. The car dies. So we turn around, take it back to Matt's lap. And I think we waited, actually, for maybe an hour. Hold on, I'll drop it. And they say, okay, you're all set. We start driving home again. I think this time he got it up to 50. And the same thing. The car just choked to death, okay? And now my dad's upset. So he took it back. He said, look, don't even tell me the thing's working until you know that you've got it fixed. And so we go home. And I don't remember how we got home. This, my mother had to come pick us up or something. And the next day, they called us back and said, look, we still have no idea what's wrong with this car, but we got plenty of other ones out here. We'll just come in and just pick another one. So that's what he did, and he picked out the blue, and that thing was great. It never had a problem with it. It ran great. Well, I'll drop it once more to finish this off. So it had to be 3 days after that, after we got the blue one. Matt Slap Chevrolet service manager gave us a call. They literally took the car apart, okay, piece by piece, the engine, and discovered, buried somewhere in there, somewhere in the fuel line, someone at the factory who must have been, like, annoyed with his boss that particular day for some reason, took a cigarette filter
and jammed it in there somewhere, somewhere pretty deep where it wasn't easy to get to either. And it had the effect of, well, the fuel would go good enough until it hit a certain demand, and then no longer could you get enough gas going to it, and the thing would just die. And it took them a long time to figure that out. And they offered him the green one if he wanted to bring back the blue one, and we have kept the blue one. So that's the story of the 72 Corvette there, Gary. WQNI, back to that.
A disgruntled employee with a Winston. I mean, this is like, oh, my God. That's great. That's a great story, Paul. Thank you. That's really great. Why did they ever get rid of that that split window boat tail? I loved that. That really was. They did that with the Buick Riviera. Came out that year, and for both of those cars, they had the split rear window, and they got rid of it the next year, and I don't know why. Probably because that's probably, you know, what prompted that guy to stick the filter in the fuel line. You know, it took him years to build up that that apprehension, you know, but it finally reached a breaking point, and you know, he finished up that smoke, and he saw that fuel line sitting there back in 72. It took you know, what, 9 years. But he stuffed it in there, and he said, there. That's for getting rid of the center window, the center divider, you know. It's like, look, karma always gets you, you know. So there all there is to it. We're talking about classic cars tonight, among other insane things, as we do the very last Saturday night Global Family Hour. And thank you all for being part of South Car's VoIP history. It's just great to have you all along. I'm reading this list of cars that, you know, just popped into my head this week. I wanted to discuss tonight, and so I'm just kind of running them down. We've still got a few more to go. We're halfway through the 60s right now. So many great cars in the 60s. No, you're right. I missed Bernie. Bernie, I missed you. How did I miss you? Thinking about Paul's Corvette. Sorry about that, sir. YZR, come aboard.
Okay, Gary, KC2RMO, KC9YZR. Well, I don't know what to consider classic cars. What other people consider classic, I'm not sure I consider classic. But I know for a number of years there I wanted a 57 Chevy. I like the style of it and stuff like that, the way the 57 Chevy looked there, but I never did get one. I do drive a 2005 Chevy Malibu now. It's not like the Malibu of the 60s, but it's a six-cylinder engine, and it gets better gas mileage than my two four-cylinder engines did. At one point in time, I had a Mercury Merkur. I kind of missed that car, M-E-R-K-U-R, Mercury Merkur. It was the sportiest car I ever had. It had heated mirrors. It had heated seats. Everything was electric. Electric seats and the heated mirror and mirrors, and I had a crank open moonroof. I used to open that up almost every night, even in the wintertime sometimes. I'd open up that moonroof. It was designed so that the air wouldn't come rushing down inside there, and I could look up at the moon or whatever at night. I was just going to mention that there was a couple things that I missed from cars for a while, after they no longer had them on there, and that was what they call the fly windows. Sometimes I want a little air there, and I wouldn't want to open the window. You could open those little triangular shaped fly windows, I think they were called. And then there was these vents that you could pull a lever down by your feet and open up the vent to let some air in down by your feet, and I don't think they have those anymore either. So and of course, I don't miss the floor-mounted dimmer switches. There's those, a lot of times would stick in the wintertime, and I'd have to kick it so I could dim my lights at night if you get a little ice or snow on them. And I'm going to break. But I will say this. So my first car was a 64 Ford station wagon. It had a 289 in it, and and it was a heavy car because of the metal was twice as thick. You could run across the top of it and wouldn't do any damage to it at all. Of course, now if you push your hand on the roof of the car, it feels like you're going to dent it in. And that's what I had first, was a 64 Ford station wagon, and then I had a 67 Plymouth 33, and everybody would slow down when they saw me because they thought it was a police car, because the previous owner had mounted two CB antennas either side of the rear window, to the left and to the right. There was a short section of flat metal there between the rear window and the trunk where there was room for where you could mount antennas, and you had two CB antennas on there, and in the middle you had a scanner antenna. So everybody seen the car coming down the road, they thought it was a police car, so they slowed down every time they'd see me. And I did have a few Fords, and I had, I don't know. My best friend had a Ford Fairlane. I never had one myself. My dad used to like Ford Galaxy 500s, and, so anyway, that's about all I can think of right now. 7-3 and back to that, KC2RMO, KC9YZR.
KC2RMO. Bernie, you were reading my mind. The next car on the list happens to be probably my all-time favorite. I just fell in love with this car when it came out, and I have loved this car to this day. And it is the 1964 Galaxy 500 XL. It is big. It is powerful. You have that 390 engine in it. Luxurious and sporty all at once. The seats are just gorgeous in that. It had beautifully appointed interior. And that thing moved like a rocket, like a 2.5-ton rocket. It was just awesome car. So that was the next car on the list. We will continue with the list, but I see Six Victor has a comment, and we will go to him right now. Gordon, hello there, sir.
Well, thank you for that rapid response, sir. Hi there, Mr. Wisconsin. KY6V, you know, he raised a great question, and I've never understood this. Maybe you can comment on it, Gary. These little triangular windows that we used to have on the driver's side and the passenger side were always something that helped me out. You know, you could open that up. I called it a wind window for the lack of some other naming, possibly. But if I was driving a long period of time and in the night and trying to stay awake, I'd flip that little baby open and let that wind blow against me and keep me going. Why did they do away with that, Gary? KY6V, over.
You know, I don't know. It was, again, one of the stupid things that have happened in automotive evolution. And and Bernie, I just wanted to comment too before I forget. I almost bought a Merkur. I don't know how he really said that. Merkur, M-E-R-K-U-R. It was a cool car. I really liked them. But getting back to the wind windows, I don't know. The only thing, you know, nowadays everything's air conditioned. You know, they expect you to use that air conditioner for everything. And I don't want to always use the air conditioning. And now with the truck, it's great because the cab, it's pretty big in this one. It's a four-door truck, you know. But the airflow is such that, I can drop the windows and open up the back window, and I've got a great ventilation. But those fly windows or those little triangle windows just gave you great ventilation. And then the pop-up ventilator, remember the ventilator that was below the windshield in the case of the T-Bird on the and there were other cars too. Studebakers used to have that on the fender vents. They would let fresh air in too, and you could scoop a whole lot of fresh air that way too. So I don't know why they did it. I'm just thinking they need to, you know, sit down and kind of take a look backwards and think about the way we used to do things, because some of that stuff was a whole lot better, that's for sure. A couple of things here. We've got, looks like Woody wants to check in, and Paul has a comment. So, Woody, go right ahead, XCX, and then we go to Paul. So, Woody, come on aboard.
Hello, hello, and my wife just came in and said, I'm back. Good, after spending all my money down at Joann Fabrics. Well, anyway, just wanted to say hi to you guys, and I'm going to miss, tell me what's happening here. Why aren't we having these Saturday night family hour things anymore and all that kind of stuff? I just checked, just started listening in. And by the way, good evening to you. And yeah, I like that comment about the gutters too. You know, cars need to have those things. I get rained on every time I get in the car and get out of the car over.
Okay, Woody, was that it?
Pretty much, yeah. I never could distinguish the cars. Of course, I could distinguish these PT Cruisers when they came out a couple of years ago because they were so different looking, but they looked like somebody kicked the tail between the ears, but anyway, but I couldn't tell it. But I really can't tell the difference between any of the other cars except for the 56 Chevy. Now, I could always tell that because it was two-tone, but it was a lot like the 56, 55 or 56 Cadillac, except for the great big fins, you know. Oh, well, those were the days, but I know that one of the first cars that my parents got after they stopped, let me break for a second, was a bright red Chevrolet, and they wanted to get a bright red one so I could see it, you know. They had a Studebaker, but they were driving down the road one day, and the steering wheel just came off from my mother's hand, you know, as they were driving down the highway, and so she never did trust it for some odd reason after that. I don't know why. Well, now I'm all through. This is N5XCX, and back to net.
Hey, thank you, Woody. I don't mean to laugh, but the steering wheel coming off in your mom's hand reminds me of an old Popeye cartoon where Popeye's teaching Olive how to drive, and he says, let me take the wheel, and she pulls it off, you know, and hands it over to Popeye. But hopefully everything turned out all right with that. And thank you for checking in. We moved things along. One India had a comment, and Paul, hello there, sir.
Hey, Gary, thanks for letting me back in. WQ1I, the comment was on the windows, the fly windows, the little triangular windows. Those things were fantastic. I miss those, and like Gordon said, it was great. You could open that thing up and have the air blowing on you. It was wonderful. But they were great in the wintertime, too, because when you didn't open them up all the way so that they were pointing towards you, just cracked them, they created a vacuum. So, like, if you were driving, you know, in the winter and it's cold out and you don't want to open up the windows, but let's say you were smoking something, you know, like a cigarette, and you know, you just hold that cigarette or something like it in your left hand on the wheel, and with that little window crack, it would just like pull the smoke right out as you're driving along. A little vacuum. It was great. It was multi-purpose. And but to Gordon's question as to why they don't do them anymore, my guess is that it just got it's expensive to have to build that thing. And I'm betting that back in the day that they didn't do a real good job of mass-producing
curved cuts in glass, you know. So they would put this little, they would build this little thing there and put it in the corner, and the glass window that actually went up and down were basically cut straight on both sides. And in order to eliminate those now, all the glass is kind of cut in a curve. They're not square pieces of glass anymore. And I'm guessing that the technology now is it's very easy for them to mass produce those kinds of cuts on glass. So that would be my guess as to why they have gone the way of the woolly mammoth. WQNI, back to net.
The woolly mammoth. Thank you, Paul. You know, I had a thought that maybe, you know, running with those messes up your aerodynamics and, you know, might cut a few miles per gallon off of the you know, the mileage figures. But you reminded me of an incident that occurred with my 71 Duster, which I loved. I loved that car. I had a red 71 Duster, and it just was such a cool car. But I remember coming home from the radio station one night. It was I was working late. It was about probably 12:31 o'clock. I'm coming down down Interstate 690 from the station, heading for Syracuse. And it was a nice night, and I lit up a cigar, and I'm tooling down 690 here with my cigar, and I'm wearing this leather jacket, this very nice leather jacket that I bought at Filene's, and you know, I'm looking good and smoking a big old cigar, and got down to about the last quarter of it, and I'm like, well, let's get a little ratty, so I throw it out the window. And I'm driving along, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm like, inside of the car is kind of looking a little smoky, and I'm like, coming up on a factory there that runs alongside 690. I said, man, they must be really been working overtime tonight, you know, and it's getting a little stinky too, you know. And I took a look over towards the factory side, and I happened to notice that my right shoulder was glowing. And what had happened was the cigar had gone out the window and come back in the car, landed on my right shoulder, and actually it burned a hole in the leather jacket, and that's what was smoldering and stinking the car up. I pulled off and got my jacket off and stomped it off, and the whole thing. But needless to say, there was a $300 coat that never saw the light of day again. But that's why you should never smoke a cigar going 65 miles an hour and wearing a leather coat. I knew that was going to happen, but that's better. But that's my little story there. So let me buy a nickel, and we're actually into our third hour. Holy cow, we've just finished up hour number two. We're going into hour number three, and let's wrap it up, shall we? We'll do the last of the list here. I had, after the 64 Galaxy 500 XL, the love of my life, we have we have AMCs. Now, AMC, as you know, was Ramblers and all the attendant cars that went with it. It was formed by a merger of Nash and Hudson, and they produced some pretty good cars. They did a lot of basic transportation cars, but they had some really, really interesting designs, too. And one of my favorite designs from them, Paul recently returned it to Filene's. They'll take anything back. They had a number of really cool designs, and one of the ones that I love the best is the 1965 Marlin. That was just a cool looking fastback, just a neat car, and you know, kind of a bargain if you're a collector. You can get them. Reasonably cheap, and there's like a real heavy cool factor that goes with that. Just a neat car, like them. And later in the decade, you had your AMXs, which were a killer performance car too. So they weren't just all about plain Jane everyday transportation. They made some great stuff too, some muscle cars as well. 65 GTL, you know, little GTL. If you have a a song written about you, you must be doing something right, right? 65 Corvair Monza Spider. You had the engine in the back, and that little car could move. Just a sharp-looking car, especially the convertibles. They looked great. Let me buy a nickel. The 1966 Mustang Fastback. I love any 60s Mustang, but that 66 Fastback just looked great. And that of the 60s decade Mustangs is my favorite. 67 Dodge Polara. Might not strike you as being a dream car type of item, but I just liked them. They were just a big, cool-looking car, comfy, not as stodgy as the Chrysler, little sportier, and could move very well. 67 Plymouth Roadrunner, try and catch one of those. Ha, ha, ha. That was a very quick and very impressive car. Again, a lot of coolness with those. 68 Camaro SS and the 1968 Firebird 400 convertible. Anything built on that platform was just great and just a true muscle car. And 1970 Torino, just a great looking car, very very sleek looking. And for those who have seen the movie Gran Torino, that was a couple of years later, but the Torino was a neat looking car. It was kind of an offshoot of the Mustang, more of a family oriented Mustang, I guess you could say. Let me buy a nickel. And as we're getting into the 70s here, you have to mention my 71 Duster one more time. Best bang for the buck I could think of. That thing was just a great car. Looked sharp, handled very well, and I still miss it. It was just a cool car. And finally, the last car on my list would be a 1975 Cadillac Coupe de Ville. It is my favorite monster. 500, count them, 500 cubic inches. Marron. That's a huge engine. And again, what a ride. I mean, that's like you could, you know, again, the car requires its own zip code. You can rent out the space in the trunk as an apartment. It's just amazing. It's just huge stuff. So that's my cars popped into my head this week, and I thought I'd throw them out for you guys to comment on. And you know what? It's 8 minutes into the third hour of the final Saturday Night Net, and let's say we take one final round of check-ins. This is it. Your chance to make South Cars history. So come on aboard for the very last time. I'm KC2RMO looking for check-ins right now.
One India.
And question, sir, 6 Victor.
Sierra United November.
All right, that's it. The last three. And I can't think of a better three to wrap things up with. And We will pick up one India right now. Hello there, Paul.
Okay, Gary. Well, just before we go here, I want to throw out one more car. It's one of my favorites because it was the first car that I ever bought that was my own car, the first new car that I ever bought. It was a 1977 Mercury Capri Mark II. And what a nice car. The thing was silver. It had a black interior, but the seats were two-tone, so the inserts in the seats were maroon. It had a sunroof. It had mag wheels. The car was actually made in Germany and imported here. So it was a really, really nice car. I wish I had that car today, and I'll email you a picture of that car, Gary, just for the heck of it, even though I can't find a picture of it with the same interior that I had. I had a nice one. It was a very nice car. But thank you for doing the net tonight. This was great. It was fun. It was a pleasure for me being here for the last Saturday Night Family. I was here for the first one. So I've seen it run full circle. It's kind of sad that it's going away. But with that, all things must change, I guess. So good night to you, Gary. Thanks for doing the net. It was fantastic. Kathy, thank you for creating this net. It was your idea and your baby back then. And everybody else, too, Gordon, everybody else on board, thanks for joining us this evening. It was fantastic. And hopefully you'll come in and see us on Thursday nights when we do it again there. KC2RMO, WQ1I, back to net.
This is KC2RMO. And as George Harrison said, you know, all things must pass. And it has been so great to have you here tonight, Paul. And just great to have you as a backup, and great to have you in the net. And again, you were there at the beginning. It's great to have you along at the end. So send me the picture of that Merc. I remember those. I remember those Caprice. They were German, and always liked them. Just a great little car, classy little car, and not that little either, you know. But not a big Merc, but just a neat car. And send me that picture. That would be very cool. And again, my many thanks for being there. Six Victor, hello there, sir. Come on aboard.
Boy, you got a great closing here, and all board members too, Gary. KY6V, thank you. I just wanted to ask you a question, but before I do that, you know, of all of the cars that I've had, from the hot rods to the this and the that, I think my two specials, and probably my primary, was a 1960 Impala that I bought off the showroom floor. It was jet black, white leather upholstery in the inside. It was just absolutely gorgeous. And I had an awful lot of fun driving that car. And maybe my second choice would be an XK120 Jaguar. That I had for quite a while. Just one heck of a road car. But the question that I have for you, unless I've missed it tonight, I thought you were adamant at looking for a Galaxy 500. Am I incorrect? And did you mention that, sir? Over.
Ah, indeed I did. It was as we went back into the... It was the beginning of the last segment, so you might not have heard it. But it was the 64 Galaxy 500 XL with a 390, and preferably a convertible. But I'm not gonna reject any hardtops either. As long as it's a two door, it has to be a two door. But that made the list. XK120. That's a work of art. That is just an insanely beautiful car. And your 1960 Impala, if they could build cars like that today, I'd rob banks to get one. I did. Well, I wouldn't get caught, you know. That's just a great, great ride. Beautiful car, and you're right. Just beautiful inside. Just, you know, it makes you want to drive. People can't even think in those terms nowadays. You know, that's what's so sad about it, is people can't even think in terms to design something like that nowadays. You know, wish they would though. I miss it a lot. But thank you for checking in, Gordon, and thank you for being there always. It's great. We close it out, and it's kind of appropriate. The last check in tonight would be Kathy. So K6SUN, hello there, ma'am.
Well, good evening, Gary, and good evening, everyone. You know, I want to thank everyone for being here for our final global hour. It's very touching for me because, you know, it's been a good ride for us, and but it's time to make some changes, and that's what we've done. But I've enjoyed being, I guess you'd consider the section manager for the global, and coming up with the programs, and we've had some great ones. But let me close with this for you, Gary. 72, Dodge Dart, Dodge Challenger, and maybe that Cougar as well. You know, I raced them all when I moved to the state of Washington, I believe. I raced cars in the Powder Puff, and they were each of those. And they each of those were quite, you know, successful in the races, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. So I wanted to end tonight with telling you about those, that they were some great cars. I enjoyed them. Now, I've had some great cars in the past, but I will turn it back to you. Thanks for doing the net tonight. It's been very special. Thanks to everyone for being so faithful and joining our Global Family Hour through the years. And we hope to see you on Thursday evening as we continue. So with that, Gary, I'll turn it back to you. And remember, tomorrow is not a 10 a.m., but there is a open rag queue tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. for anyone that wants to talk and just discuss certain topics or just chat there. But we will not be there in the morning for our rag queue. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, Gary. Thanks once again for doing the net this evening. It's been my pleasure. So back to you, KAC2RMO from Kilo 6 Sierra, United November.
Well, thank you, Kath. It's been a total pleasure doing this net tonight. And yeah, 72 was an awesome year for Challengers. Those probably 4 years, you know, 68 to 72. You know, those were muscle cars with a capital M, and they meant business. They always delivered. They were terrific cars, and just amazing. You know, just they look fast even in a picture. They look like they're going quickly, but you must have had a lot of fun racing them. That's for sure. Well, that's it. That's it for tonight, and that's it for the Saturday Night Global 2. My special thanks to Paul, WQ1I, for backing me up and for being part of the South Cars history tonight. And my very special thanks to each and every one of you who participated tonight for the same reason. My thanks, too, to Kathy, K6SUN, and to Gordon, KY6V, and to the South Cars Board of Directors, who have made it possible for me to host these nets. It's been a lot of fun. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VoIPnet schedules and general information may be found on the VoIP.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Gary, KC2RMO, saying 73. We'll see you somewhere down the line in closing this VoIP session. Thank you for your participation. This net is closed.